Hey, everybody, it's Sonny. This week's episode that you're getting for free on the iTunes feed, it's old. It's a couple weeks old now. Talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania. Had some funny moments here with JVL and Mike Warren, our new permanent guest co-host. Check that out. It's, again, funny episode. We have bonus episodes now that are just going to be on the Patreon forever. They will never be here. We'll kind of sporadically, haphazardly upload the main episodes to this feed to give you a taste, to give you a reminder. But, you know, if you want the regular injection of the good stuff, high quality stuff, you got to go over to the Patreon. So subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Check it out. And we'll see you over there.
I used to ask myself a lot of questions. Scott, you're at X-Con. How are you an Avenger? That doesn't make sense. But everywhere I go, people tell me the same thing.
Thank you, Spider-Man!
Welcome back to the Sub-Beacon. I'm Sonny Bunch. I'm the host for now. Right, co-host, special co-host, guest co-host. I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan V. Last and Michael Warren, the Mulch King of Virginia. We are here today to talk about many things, including Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, the worst movie since the MCU movie before it. We've got... What's going on in your guys' world? Mike, how was your weekend? How have you been since last we chatted?
It's great. Since last we chatted, I turned 35 years old. So that was a big...
Hey, happy birthday.
I could just tell the advertisers don't give a shit about me anymore. Like, as soon as I woke up that morning, I was like, they don't care.
I feel like, oh, I'm out of the demo.
I'm out of the demo.
No, you're fine. It's till 39 now.
What?
The demo is now, it's like 24 to 39. If you're
35
a white guy between the age of
39 is the new 35.
Yeah. If you're a white guy between the age of 24 and 39, you're fine. Actually, I think it's all the way up to 49 now, actually.
I just
if you're
new
under
lease
the age of 50, you're still, you could go out there and ask for that gum and nuts can, like Homer Simpson.
I got it.
Happy
thank
birthday.
Thank you. Yeah. No, so that's really all that's going on. And it was like one of those birthdays.
What'd you do?
Where
did you get anything special for your birthday?
Oh yeah, it was super special. It was you know, go out.
It's the traditional birthday gift.
Go out to lunch with the newborn baby.
Oh, at the Olive Garden?
At the
if you had time.
At the local Mexican restaurant. And then we did the very classy thing of immediately leaving the restaurant after we finished and going to pick up dinner at the sushi restaurant next door. All these nice plans. And then, of course, like, because this is what it's like with kids and newborns and blah, 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 didn't get to eat that sushi until like 9:30 that night. It was, you know, and I'm just like hunched over the plate, you know, just like shoveling it in. Yeah.
You went and bought sushi and then just put it in your fridge?
Yeah, you could do that. Fresh sushi?
I mean, you can
like,
do it.
It'll last like 12 hours in the fridge.
It's legal to do it, Sonny.
As with many things,
but that doesn't mean
world,
you should.
It's legal. You can certainly take that sort of risk with yourself and your health and your taste buds, but I don't know that you should do it.
Really? I you guys haven't had like sushi from the grocery store or from, you know, that where it's just like it's in refrigerated.
Not since I turned 23.
Okay. All right.
I don't eat sushi. No, thanks.
That isn't surprising.
I mean, JVL not liking sushi makes sense. But when I was a child, I would go to the gas station and get the gas station sushi.
Hey, I didn't say gas station. All right.
But I didn't.
And it's a gas station.
Once I became
Sheet
a man.
Sushi.
Once I became a man, I put away childish things like gas station sushi. And I go to like actual restaurants.
Well,
I get a takeout and bring it home, but like
I guess I was just holding on at the age of 35 to this one last, you know, vestige of youth.
Piece of childhood.
Exactly. Yeah.
Don't you worry about it like drying out on you?
No, it was delicious.
They cut it off the fish?
It was delicious. You know, refrigeration. Sure. It's an amazing innovation, Sonny Bunch.
I mean,
you got an ice box?
The fish, when they make the sushi, the fish have been dead for a while already, right? And so the fish have just been sitting in some sort of refrigeration container.
Once again, I don't know where you get your sushi from, but I only go to restaurants that fly it in straight from the seas of Japan They bring in,
and they're definitely real Japanese sushi chefs.
On the same airplane, it's the tuna and the A5 Wagyu from the Kobe Prefecture. Ooh. It all comes over on the same plane. We get it. And that's all I eat. I mean, I don't know what you guys
breakfast,
are
breakfast, lunch, and dinner, right?
Chowing down on over there. No, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but one of the funny things about where I live in Texas, so we've got Kroger's here. I go to Kroger most regularly, and Kroger gets like all of their meat from Nolan Ryan, like their steaks. Ooh. Their steaks come from like Nolan Ryan's, I guess, enormous cattle
yard.
Do they
say
somewhere
like
in Texas.
Nolan Ryan
it's like,
steaks?
It's like Nolan Ryan branded steaks. So like they get like prime fillets and choice ribeyes and it's Nolan Ryan, which cracks me up for a variety of reasons that I can't quite explain. Like I expect baseball players to open a car dealership.
I was going to say, is that the Texas version of the car dealership
or something like that? But Nolan Ryan being like, I'm gonna have 100,000 head of cattle. Like, okay, sure, why not?
And supply America's largest grocery store with it. Yeah.
Sonny, I'm going to be like 10 miles away from you tomorrow.
And yet you're not going to hang out with me at all.
It's not possible. It's a
What are you in town for? Are you giving a private speech?
I'm giving a speech, yes.
I can't come?
I'm giving a paid speech. No. You cannot come.
Are you paying, Sonny?
A small trade group.
Okay.
But
all right.
So I did something.
You sure? Because I'm going to see Cocaine Bear Thursday at 5. Are you free Thursday at 5?
Oh. How far is the Gaylord from you?
20 minutes.
Oh, let's talk off air. So they're flying me first class.
And
I have not flown first class in years. And I did something which I'm not very proud of, but I'm a little proud of it. When the travel agent said, we do first class accommodations, just tell me what flight you want to be on. I went and I pulled up all the possible flights from Newark to Dallas. And then I went into SeatGuru to check out the planes and to see which plane each of these flights used. And I chose the flight I was going to take by which one has the nicest first class section.
It's fair. I mean, I don't
is
see
that,
any reason.
Is that wrong?
No.
I just
no,
feel like, I'll be 60 before I fly first class again. So instead of just being in one of these like, great, it's a leather seat, in a 25-year-old plane, I'm going to, brand new Airbus where it's like the lay flat pods.
Yeah. Do you have a bed seat?
Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Do you turn left? Do you turn left when you get on the plane? That's the key question.
Yes. 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 I'm going to turn left when I get on the plane. I'm not even going to have to see the plebes and steerage. Now,
do they have like a full? Do they have a full curtain? Or is it,
I mean, I hope it's
a
solid door. I don't want to. Yeah, the curtain doesn't provide the insulation protection you need from the masses.
Right.
And the problem is, of course, it's such a short flight that I'm not going to lie down and sleep. But the fact that I could is really, it's really going to help me.
Well, I question, did they have you book the actual legs of the flight or did you just tell them the airline you wanted to fly?
I told them the airline and the flight number. So I was like, I want to take this American Airlines flight 1234, whatever it is.
Did you take the shortest flight possible?
Well, it's a nonstop.
So you didn't route through like Denver. You didn't fly all the way over to Denver.
Just get more time in the more time in the first class cabin.
I took the
straight shots, but I'm very excited. Have either of you flown first class recently? Are there any things that I should expect? Have they changed it?
The nicest.
Do they
flight
offer
I've,
like geisha service now or
no? I
comfort
the
station.
The nicest flight I've ever taken. I was in business class to Israel. Went to Israel. Once on the APAC junket, which was nice, and that was business class, and it was fantastic. It's the only time I've ever really slept on a flight, which made it all worthwhile. But I like that was 15 years ago. I fly Southwest. I fly the cattle cars of the sky.
Yeah,
I've never flown first class, so I have no frame of reference except like the looks that you get from the people, like the looks of shame you get from people as you walk by first class, you know, like they know that it's wrong on some level, and they look away. So that's my experience.
It's Snowpiercer.
It is right? quite
it's
Snowpiercer.
It is totally it's
and they're feeding us bugs as well.
Triangle of sadness slash,
you know, the people in steerage in Snowpiercer should have been glad that they got on that train at all.
I guess.
Otherwise, they would have died. They would have died in the snows. Instead, they got to live.
Sonny, what are you doing, bud? What's going on?
Not a whole lot.
I noticed your forehead is blank. Have you just not gotten to mass yet?
Well, I was trying to figure out what did you guys not take showers this morning? I don't understand what you're all dirty.
So we are taping on Ash Wednesday. Mike and I have both been to mass, and I assume, Sonny, that as a member of the Knights of Columbus Swimming Society,
you've already been
secretly baptized because surprise. The pool is made of holy water.
That's not how it works.
And I thought that part of the arrangement was that you had to go and get your ashes in the off season. No.
That's not. I celebrated Ash Wednesday by watching a great new trailer. I don't know if you guys saw it. I tweeted it out. A great new trailer for a movie starring Russell Crowe called The Pope's Exorcist.
Oh my.
Russell Crowe is the Pope's exorcist.
Who's the Pope?
Now, this is not he's not exorcising the Pope. He's not exorcising the demons from the devil Pope that I guess you guys have now. I don't know what's going on there. But he is the exorcist who works for the Pope. He's like the Pope's personal exorcist. The Pope sends this guy to the real hotspots.
He's the Pope's John Wick.
He's the Pope's John Wick. It's based on a real guy. It's based on this guy, Father Amaranth, or some nonsense, who is, you know, who was like an actual exorcist.
It sounds amazing.
But it's I don't think this movie is based on fact, because I saw a lot of demons and you know, supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know,
you don't believe in magic, but you've seen some things.
Those things
make you believe that all that really matters is how it doesn't matter what you believe, but only it matters how hard you believe.
You just have to believe in something. Just believe in literally anything. That's the basis of all faith, right? Is it? It doesn't really matter what specifically you believe in.
Sorry, I'm quoting the stupid Indiana Jones dialogue back to you, because that trailer does not look good.
It looks the shots of the ticker tape parade in particular look real bad.
Yeah,
real bad.
I did. Who's directing? Is it Spielberg?
No, it's James Mangold.
Who wrote it? Do we know who's the screenwriter?
I can't remember. Ugh.
Makes me nervous.
It does not look good. It does not.
It does not look like it's going to redeem Crystal Skull.
Crystal Skull, you know, Crystal Skull's fine.
Look at this; it's already happening.
Crystal Skull's fine. I gave that movie. It's funny. I gave that movie a positive review when it was in theaters. I was at the Washington Times at the time. I gave that a kind of lukewarmish thumbs up, because it's not a terrible movie. It just is a movie with some very terrible parts. It just has some very bad parts. As a whole, though, it's fine. Spielberg, good director. I'm pro Spielberg.
Written Jeffrey Dahmer, not a bad person, just a person with some bad parts.
Look, that's a fairly Catholic way of looking at things, right? Like,
yeah.
He's, you know, as long as he says he's sorry, it's fine, right?
Hate the scenes, not the movie.
I get that.
I don't know. The whole corpus, though, suffers if the parts are in peril or in some. So the Butterworth brothers are who wrote this upcoming Indiana Jones movie?
Is that a joke?
Jez and John Henry Butterworth. That's
the Butterworths.
That's what it says.
All right. So
yeah, they wrote they wrote Ford versus Ferrari.
Yeah, well, that'll be great.
And Edge of Tomorrow.
Good movie.
With Chris McQuarrie.
Okay.
Well, Chris McQuarrie.
Chris McQuarrie wrote that movie, basically.
Chris McQuarrie wrote that movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm fine. There's really nothing going on here of note. We got this. There is one thing that I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this or are aware of it, but my wife, the lovely Beth, bought this thing for the kids. It's a like make a fort kit.
And is it's a it bunch cardboard? Of like,
it's the cardboard pieces and they've got little foam circles and you put it. And I have to say, I love this thing a million times more than any of my kids do. I love putting it together and building the little structures. It's like grown-up Lego. If I had had this when I was a kid, it's like full-size Legos. I can like build a Lego house for myself. And I probably would have become an architect, frankly, if I had this as a kid and learned how to like make structures and get them to stand.
Well, now your children can become architects.
Instead, I became a writer. It was a terrible choice that I made, writer and a podcaster.
Do you yell at them to be more gentle with the pieces so they don't break them?
Yes, because they'll just stand on them. They'll just stand on the cardboard. And I'm like, you're breaking the structural integrity of the cardboard. You do this, you're not going to be able to put anything on top of it. It's just going to collapse. And they're like, but I want to put my trucks on it. I'm like, fuck you, kids. This is not a shelving unit. This isn't, you got to treat it with respect.
This isn't a toy.
It's really wonderful. It's really led to a lot of bonding time with my children.
Brought you guys together.
So you seem to be aware of what I'm talking about, JBL.
Yeah, we had a cardboard pirate ship. We never got the castle building blocks. We had the cardboard pirate ship, which lasted for, I don't know, a good 2 weeks before, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
aggressive
that's the thing,
play
is
it, rendered it yeah. inoperable.
Well, that, like, when the, with the I'm curious to see how long these things last. They're okay for now, but it's definitely the sort of thing where like they will stand on a piece of cardboard and I'll like tense up. I'll like visibly tense up, like get off that.
So listen, let me just give you a parenting tip.
Yeah.
Once they break it, what you do is, so you should preemptively order another one. And when they break this, you then bring out the new set and you say, so kids, you didn't do what I told you to. You broke it. Now, this is my set. And you're going to watch me play with it, but you may not touch it because you had yours, but you broke it by not listening.
It's
and
fair.
So these are the consequences of your choices. And that's how they learn.
Make sure you immediately pull it out when they break it. Just like...
Right. You have to have it,
well, like, you do it right
in the closet.
Right.
Because otherwise they don't learn. They have to connect. Exactly. Connect
it's like with a dog. When you have a dog
the
and the dog shits on the floor, you can't rub its nose in the poop later. Because then the dog is just like, why are you rubbing my nose in this poop? I don't understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. You have to do it immediately so they know not to do
rub
it.
Rub your kids' faces in their cardboard poop. Got it.
Yeah, look at what you've done. Look at what you've done. Now I have to. Actually, I kind of want to do this. I actually just want to get both sets out at the same time and build a super fort, frankly. If I had two cardboard fort sets, I could build a fort the size of my living room. It would be amazing. There'd
wow.
be like hallways and tunnels, windows. I could build windows.
It sounds astonishing.
It's amazing.
It's a lot of fun. I recommend it if you got kids. They won't understand what to do with it because they don't have their, like, the problem with children. Children have many problems. But one of the problems with children is that they don't have the finger strength to really do the things that you want them to do. So, like, even, like, putting Legos together, we've talked about this, I think, like, getting Legos together is hard for little kids because they can't snap the pieces together. They can't take them apart. They don't have their monkey fingers aren't strong enough yet. So with the cardboard fort, it's great, but they really can't put the thing together at all. Like they just are physically incapable of doing it. They're not strong enough to force the foam pieces into the little cardboard slots, which is, again, it's great for me because it means I actually get to do everything.
Yeah.
I get to do the whole thing, and they just get to play on it and play
as
in
God
it and play
intended.
Around it. I send them, I'm like, hey, go get me one of the little circles. I need one of the little circles to make, and they go and get me that. And usually it takes them like 5 reminders, so I end up having to go get it myself. And by the time they bring me one, I've like moved on to the next piece, so I need it for that anyway. But yeah, no, I recommend it. It's a fun toy. I'll go look up what the name of it is.
That's a good idea.
So last week I mentioned that I was super excited for the next like 6 to 8 weeks of movies. And at the Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania last night, I saw even more trailers for movies that are coming very soon, and I'm so excited, including Fast X, which now that I've seen Jason Momoa in a Fast and Furious movie, it's obvious that this is what America has needed for the last decade.
One could say it's what America has been building toward for its entire existence.
Yes. And I needed Jason Momoa in a Fast and Furious movie. And we have that. We have the Tetris movie on Apple Premium Plus, whatever we're supposed to call it.
Apple TV Plus, please.
Respect Apple TV Plus. We've got the Michael Jordan movie that'll, I guess, is Netflix? Or is that going to be in theaters?
I think that's just a regular theatrical.
Dungeons and Dragons, Super Mario Brothers, Shazam, in which we get to see one of the great actresses of her time as a Shazam movie villain, Helen Mirren.
Well,
sure.
It's about time.
It is about time for that, right? One of the things
she's also been in a Fast and Furious movie.
That's
though,
right. Yes,
wasn't
that's
she
right.
In, yes. She was in. She's like Jason Statham's mom.
Fast 7 or something.
In those movies. Yeah.
The most slumming I've ever seen anyone really. And
well, Helen Mirren.
There's a long tradition of this. This is Michael Caine in Jaws 4 or whatever. Like,
yes.
This is not a.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
It's British. The Brits have different standards.
And Cocaine Bear. I mean, like, this is, it's all coming together. We have made it through the desert.
The movies
we were out in the desert.
Back.
We were in the movie desert for like the last year. And it was honestly, there were times when this show was hard to do because there just wasn't enough product. And now not only is there product, but it is good product. And I'm fired up.
The Pope's Exorcist comes out April 14th.
The Pope's Exorcist, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which brings back Gamora. Great.
Sure.
We're going to cheapen all the deaths.
No one's ever really gone.
Yeah,
no one's ever really gone.
No one stays dead except for, well, you know, in comic books, right? The joke is that, you know, it was the Bucky clause of death, which was that the only people who ever stay dead are Uncle Ben and Bucky.
Yeah.
And then Uncle Ben and Bucky came back.
Yeah.
But in the MCU, right, the only person who's ever really going to stay dead is going to be Tony Stark because they can't afford Robert Downey Jr.
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's funny. In the long, long ago, like 2014 or 15, I wrote a blog post for the Free Beacon that said Marvel should just sign Robert Downey Jr. to a $1 billion contract.
Yes.
Give him $1 billion. And he can show up in like 3 properties scattered throughout the year, move him into the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. role or something, make him some sort of elder statesman in the MCU, and just have him show up, because otherwise this thing is going to fall apart. And guess who was proven 100% right? This guy. Didn't you have something else you wanted to complain about with the trailers, though?
Oh, well, I will complain about this. So I had to go see, so we're talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
Yes.
And I had to go see it twice because the first time I went, I took G money. And we were at a 12 p.m. show of a superhero movie, a Marvel superhero movie, which is rated, I think, PG-13.
Mm-hmm.
PG-13.
Right. A very, very full Dolby theater. 70 to 75% of the audience is under the age of 10, and the lights go down after. So Nuvi wraps up. Maria Menounos bids us goodbye in all of her MILF glory, and the first thing we get is we get the green. You know, the following trailer has been approved for all audiences, and fucking Ghostface jumps out and starts like stabbing people. At which point, a whole lot of kids in the audience freaked the F out, including G Money, who was like, "What is happening? I don't want to be here. I want to go." And so we noped the fuck out of the theater. We lasted, again, under 60 seconds through the first trailer, and then had to just like, he wanted no part of going back in there. Who the fuck puts an R-rated horror movie trailer in front of a matinee of a superhero movie?
But I don't see.
Well, I'm sure that's just that's the trailer package that plays in front of the movie every time it plays, no matter the time or day or whatever.
Is it?
I don't see what the problem is.
Yeah, that's
what it was approved for all audiences. What?
Approved for all audiences.
What more do you need to know?
In bed that night, G Money says to me, he goes, "Dad, that thing with the long face, Are you sure it's not going to come to get me? Are you sure it's not real? Ghostface was there for him.
You should have told him that, don't worry, Ghostface isn't coming into the house unless, as long as you don't step on the cardboard pieces of the boat. Then Ghostface will come for you.
So I was pretty pissed off about that.
I don't blame you. I mean, I don't blame you. It's funny. It's interesting. You know, at the Draft House, it's where I go see all my movies now. I go to the Draft House, and it's the same. It's the same basic package of trailers before most every movie. They vary it somewhat. You know, if you're there to see, when I went to go see Magic Mike's Last Dance, and it was more rom-com type stuff, right? But usually I'm good there to see an action movie or a superhero movie or something, and it's the same basic trailers. But when they have a kids movie, it's kids trailers.
Yeah.
But this is not. I mean, it's not a kids movie.
It's not quite a kids movie, but it's kind of a kids movie, right? It's Ant-Man.
It's a noon showing of a PG-13 MCU movie. I agree that that's bad thinking.
All right, so I'm not a crazy person here. Anyway, so I went back and saw it last night, and I know you guys, I don't want to spoil anything for the show here, you guys seemed a little down on this film, but I'm guessing that neither of you saw it in IMAX 3D, which is what I saw it in, because that was the time, the only time I could make was an IMAX 3D showing, and I really feel like I've seen it in the way that the artists behind this film intended it to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Sonny, you want to give us a big boy review?
I want to hear the big boy review of Ant-Man and the Wasp in IMAX 3D, because you saw it as God intended. God and James Cameron intended.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, tells the story of Ant-Man, who is now post-blip written himself a book, and he goes to readings of his book at local bookstores, and Scott Lang is just, he's happy, he's go-lucky, but maybe he's lost his edge, because his daughter is all grown up now and is in prime Mattis territory. And she cares about homelessness and doing things, and she's got her own suit, and she gets thrown in jail, and she's been monkeying with the quantum realm. And then, all of a sudden, the entire family, Michelle Pfeiffer and Michael Douglas and Scott Lang, they all get sucked into the quantum realm. And while they're Michelle in the Pfeiffer. Quantum realm... They have to go see Lando Calrissian, who in this version is being played by Bill Murray, and it all looks like that terrible Disney animated movie from 3 months Strange World. It looks so much like Strange World that it's uncanny, like almost like they shared design directors or something.
Hmm.
And they have adventures, and they meet Kang the Conqueror, who is Thanos for what is this, Phase 4? Phase 5?
For the record, Black Panther Wakanda Forever was the end of Phase 4. Oh. We're now into Phase 5.
Yeah,
phase
I really felt like that was a bookend. MCU. I really felt like Wakanda Forever bookended that phase. Really, it's a nice clean demarcation for. We've got Avengers, the Kang Empire coming, and then another Avengers something they're going to make Kang happen, and we have now gone from a place where. Like, Marvel has gone from being a place where we had well-defined characters with stakes and arcs fighting for things which are important to them in recognizable settings to sci-fi and space opera cowboy schlock with Guardians of the Galaxy to magic. And once you have magic, there are no rules. And now we've gone past magic into quantum realm multiverses. Now we have timelines and time travel and alternate. And the whole thing feels like it is in the process of collapsing in on itself. To the point where I cannot imagine why anybody anywhere in the world will care.
I have a question.
There ends my review.
Okay, so here's my question for you. And we talked about it on the show a little bit, but did you watch all of Loki? Did you watch the whole show? We watched some of the episodes.
No, I watched like half of it, and I eventually tapped out. Because we got Kang, played by Jonathan...
Yeah, Jonathan Majors.
Jonathan Majors, no relation to Lee Majors. Who is... Jonathan Majors, I guess, is like the new Josh Hartnett. He's just in everything. He's in Creed 3. He's in this. He's like the Hollywood has just decided that he's going to happen.
Well, he's in an art house weightlifting movie, like a bodybuilding movie that got picked up at Sundance for a lot of money. He's everywhere. He was in that movie Devotion that came out. It was like a knockoff Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah. With the guy from Glenn.
With Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell from Top Gun Maverick. And I feel like there's another movie he's in coming up. And we first saw him in that sort of blaxploitation Western that he was the lead in like a year and a half
ago. The Harder They Fall.
The Harder They Fall. Anyway. And he's in this. And I get the sense he's a very nice actor. But this role gives him... He is not interesting in this role.
Explain to me, JBL. Explain to me what exactly Kang is doing.
Yes. So Kang, whose powers are that he can sometimes he can shoot and he can travel to different timelines in different multiverses in different universes, and he can just destroy them. He destroys all of the things with all of his destroy power, because sometimes he has the power when he's not doing telekinesis and moving things with his mind, then he's shooting blue bolts which disintegrate people out of his hands, and also making energy discs like Magneto. And look, I don't know what's going on with the MCU version of Kang. I know that in the Marvel Kang canon, he has no powers. He's just a humanoid who has access to 40th century technology. And it's his ability to jump time streams, which allows him to get like super suits. He's basically he's time travel Doctor Doom, but not as interesting.
Yeah, that's about right. Technically, it's the same thing here. So at the end of Loki, they introduce Kang. They don't call him Kang. I don't think they don't call him Kang the Conqueror. Certainly, he is Kang, and he's a guy who has unified all of the timelines. There's only one timeline because of him. He's kept everything from branching off. He's compressed it all down from like to the one timeline. And they kill him at the end of that show. They kill him, which in turn creates chaos.
Who's there's the they?
Splintering timelines.
Loki kills
they
him?
Lokis. Tom Hiddleston, okay. Tom Hiddleston Loki and Lady Loki.
Okay.
Mike Warren is shaking his head.
I didn't watch this.
Angry at all this nerd shit.
Go. Like, I have thoughts.
What is their ERA
plus? I have thoughts
what
later,
is the
but
ERA
you go
plus?
Ahead, super nerds, and I will share my thoughts later. Go ahead.
So anyway, but in Loki, they kind of explain what his purpose is, what he's doing, and what happens when he is eliminated. The elimination of that Kang creates all the other Kangs, basically, is my
the ones we saw at the end
of
the stinger, in the stinger.
But if
right?
Right. But if you haven't watched all that, if you haven't watched that 8 hours of television, I don't understand how you could possibly understand what's happening in this movie. None of it is set up in a compelling way at all. And that's really the big problem with this movie, is that it has one job. It really only has one job. And that's not to service the character of Ant-Man or his family. It's not to look good, certainly, because this movie looks like complete ass. And it's not even really to like be an entertaining action thriller type movie. It is to introduce mass audiences to Kang, who is the Thanos, as JBL says, of this cycle of Marvel movies. And it fails at that. I think it like
utterly.
Objectively fails at what it needs to do here. And as a result, it's a failure on basically every level. Now, I didn't hate this movie. I didn't hate this movie because I have done the homework, so I kind of knew what was going on. I understood it. It has a lot of it. I like all of the actors and actresses in this movie. I like all of the performances in this movie. We didn't even really talk about Bill Murray very much.
Can I interrupt you here for one moment to say a word on behalf of Evangeline Lilly? Because Evangeline Lilly is treated as an actor by this script as poorly as any semi-leading actor anywhere in the history of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She is given nothing.
Zero.
For the full 2 hours and 15 minutes. She's basically a spear character. And she is an above-the-line talent. She's a main character in this, certainly a main character within the Ant-Man franchise. And she is given zero to do or even say. She's got like seven lines of dialogue in the whole movie.
The movie is every not time an Ant-Man movie. It's Ant-Man and the Wasp.
She's in the title of the movie. And she's in the title of the movie.
I felt like I could see her soul dying a little bit in every scene. Just as an actress, and it made me upset for her.
Well, the problem with this movie, one of the many problems with this movie is that you have essentially five lead characters. You have five competing lead characters. You have Scott Lang, you have Scott Lang's daughter, which is like where the real emotional core of the movie is. Then you have Henry Pym and Janet Van Dyne, right? Or is it Hope Van, I don't know. You have Michael Douglas and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Who have like another relationship of their own that is like an interesting kind of competing thing. And then you got Evangeline Lilly, who's just there.
Sitting in the middle of it. Yeah. She's given less to do than MODOK is. Just as a matter of character development and growth, she is given less than MODOK by this script.
I have so many thoughts on this, but we got to kick it to Mike Warren here. We've excluded Mike, who is the only non-nerd.
I'm a nerd, but not the Marvel Comics nerd. So I'm coming in a little cold.
Mike, I want you to use your linguistic powers, your powers as a writer, to describe what MODOK looks like.
He's a big head. I mean, I don't know what else to say. He looks, it's like taking one of those, it's like putting a face on a cube and then like scrunching it up and then sticking some chicken legs on. Like, I burst out laughing when I saw it, which I think is what the movie wants you to do. But like, mostly because I didn't know if it was like a joke that it was like made intentionally to look like dog shit, but I have then I realized, no, this is like a character and they're trying to like make him, like, I guess this is a character in the Marvel comics.
Do you not remember the MODOK TV series?
No.
We did an episode on this show. There was a
Hulu
show.
An animated Hulu show.
Yeah, so it was the Robot Chicken guys.
I can't
they did, and they did it as a sitcom.
I can't follow.
Where MODOK is a family sitcom. And
voiced by Patton Oswalt. Okay.
Voiced by Patton Oswalt. And the whole thing is done purely as a like 22-minute situation comedy where MODOK is the main character. And it was delightful.
I should watch that then. I'd rather watch that than this garbage movie. Hold on. So, okay. I have to share thoughts. So, first of all, I was texting you guys while I was waiting for the movie to start, the Tim and Eric connection to the Ant-Man franchise in MCU. So at the Alamo Drafthouse, they play the sort of pre-show, and they've got Paul Rudd's performance on the Tim and Eric Awesome Show, Great Job, where he's like Cellar Man and he's like typing and dancing or whatever. And then like a little featurette with Greg Turkington from the cinema. That was by far the things that I have. One thing I have seen, the little Paul Rudd sketch, like 1,000 times, because it's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And then an extension of this like weird Adult Swim TV show. That was like the peak of my enjoyment for like the next 2 hours, because the rest of it was just so not, that had none of that kind of, which I think the first two Ant-Man movies did have that kind of like looseness, lightness. It was, you know, funny. Like this movie was.
That's a great word. Loose is exactly the right word for the first
Yes,
two.
They were loose. Well, so I did do a little research and I actually found this out because I got an indication even before I saw the movie that it was not going to be good, because Paul Rudd has been doing a ton of like podcast promotion for this movie. And he was on a podcast that I listened to. And so I thought, well, like if they're sending Paul Rudd out to like pitch this movie and make these appearances on these podcasts, like it must be garbage. But Rudd said something, which was that they were the hosts were talking to him about this, about the Ant-Man movies, and said, you know, and of course you wrote them. And he said, I didn't write this one. I didn't have a writing credit on this new one. And that, I think, is the like answer to like why. So I went back and looked. So the first one is what Edgar Wright wrote it. And then with Paul Rudd and Adam McKay wrote the first Ant-Man.
Right.
The second one was.
Didn't Adam McKay come in and direct it too?
No. That was because Peyton Reed did it as well.
Yeah.
Directed all of them. I don't think the problem is Peyton Reed. And then the second one, which I liked actually, Ant-Man and the Wasp, was Chris McKenna, your buddy Sonny, who wrote that with also Paul Rudd. And this one, no dice. I don't even know the guy who wrote it, but no.
Yeah, let me tell you who really wrote it, Kevin.
Yeah, Feige. Exactly.
This clearly exactly. has yep. executive, and this is the first time that I've ever thought. Geez, Feige stayed too long. He should have moved on up to whatever he was going to next before Phase 5 of Marvel. Because Phase 4 sucked, but Phase 5 is going to be dog shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the problem with this movie compared to the previous two, right? Is that first two movies are essentially self-contained adventures dealing with Ant-Man and his family. And it's trying to, you know, we have like actual stakes for Ant-Man. And he wants to get his life together. He wants to get back with his daughter. And again, the second one, self-contained. It's dealing with him and his family, and you know, it's kind of funny and silly.
And they make a comment. They make a comment in that second one about how this happens in the midst of the end game or the whatever it was, the end game and the one before that, Infinity War. Like that, this was like apart from those movies. I mean, it really like made that point like in the text of the movie itself. This stands alone.
Well, it came out. I think it came out after
Infinity War.
It came out after Infinity War, but before Endgame.
Yes.
Correct. Remember the end of that movie is them getting blipped away and him getting stuck in the quantum realm. It's connected in the sense that like people will be like, you're an Avenger. Yes, I'm an Avenger. But that's all it needed to be. But this one instead is like, again, it's trying to set up this whole Kang thing, which just they don't do well.
Is Kang supposed to be scary?
Very poorly.
Is he supposed to be scary or like it threatening? Like I don't know what to feel about him. I mean, but he's boring. I mean, like even like the threatening lines, he sort of like says in this very monotonous, like nothing. Like, I mean, again, like I could not get away from the feeling that, okay, here they are. And I don't know, were they in Atlanta? Were they in London? Wherever they were filming this, it's like, they're just on a soundstage and they're just talking and it just sucks.
Well, this whole movie, the unreality of this movie is tied entirely to the fact that there basically are zero scenes that take place in anything approximating the real world. I mean, just like watching, like at a certain point in the film, I was just watching the characters walk on the ground.
Yes.
Because I wanted to see how their feet interacted with the floor, and it looked like shit every single time. I mean, it just looked like they were walking on mushy ground is the best way I can describe it. Like it didn't look right. It didn't look like it was real or good. And this movie, it does such weird things. Like for instance, you know, Bill Murray's in this movie for like 3 minutes. Bill Murray's in this movie for 3 minutes and he is as charming as he always is. He's mailing it in, I feel like, less than might usually be expected for Bill Murray in a movie of this sort. But the character serves literally no purpose other than pure expository. We got to get from one scene to the next scene.
He's Lando Calrissian. Lando had never shown up again in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Right. Like, imagine we're at the banquet and the doors open and Vader is there and Leia is in jail and Han is being tortured and that's it.
And we just never see him. We never see Lando again after that.
Yeah, that's the other big problem is that it fails to establish the character of Kang as heavy.
Yes.
Which is the success of Thanos as a character. Thanos is kept off screen for the longest time. Right, for movies and movies and movies, he's just off screen. And when we finally get him, it's in dribs and drabs. And instead of getting him, we get his like four horsemen or his five horsemen in the beginning of Infinity War. And those characters, who we have never met before, proceed to kick the living shit out of all the heroes, which establishes that if his henchmen can do this to them, then holy fuck, Thanos must be the baddest badass of them all, right? And you cannot, you have to, this is, you know, wrestling understands this. You have to establish a villain as heavy before they are an effective villain. And this, the guy who's going to anchor your entire phase five is taken out by a bunch of ants?
Yeah.
What? And Ant-Man?
What? No, this is the other thing I mentioned to somebody. I don't think I actually wrote my review because I didn't want to spoil it. But, like, Kang has now been introduced twice to audiences. And in both of these, he has been killed. He's been dispatched with ease in both of these things. And I guess the theory of Kang as a super enormous threat is that there's a million of them in the Council of Kangs, right? Like, there's tons
Raw
and tons of Kangs.
Kang.
But, like,
Mike, you're going to black out.
No, there's this moment in the movie, like, near the end, when Michelle Pfeiffer says, "It's over." And Kang responds, "It's never over." And that's how I feel about all this. Like, it's never over. There's another TV show you have to watch, or another, like, you know, Wikipedia page you have to read through to understand what happened. It was driving me insane.
Were either of you confused by the level of heavy-handedness in the final minute and a half, in which Paul Rudd says like five different times, at least the one I killed was the bad one. You know, it's not the case that if he was the good one, if I just let him go. I mean, obviously that's where this was all headed. And to have that be said once would have been a little heavy-handed, but to have him say it as many times as he does in the course of 45 seconds, I just thought, what is happening here?
I thought that was at least an effort to get back to the kind of funny meta original idea of the first couple films. It's like a wink at the audience.
I guess, but can't you wink at them once? And if you keep winking, then it almost is like the script thinks the audience doesn't understand. Right. We got to make sure they really understand that we're setting him up for he's our villain, right? You can't just make them wait till the stinger.
Yeah.
Which is what the other, I guess, I don't. Also, is Jonathan Majors a good actor? Again, I assume he is. I assume he's a fine actor, that he is not Josh Hartnett, but.
He's pretty good. He's pretty good.
Because the script doesn't help him.
No. Well, he's given it's a garbage script.
Totally.
And his choices vacillate between, you know, one, sometimes he's sort of quiet Kang, sometimes he's screamy Kang, is he insane? Is he not insane? I mean, there are moments when he looks as if he's playing Kang like Kang is a mental patient.
Right. And sometimes he's like Thanos too, right? Like, I'm all powerful. Right. Like, here's my fist.
Yes.
I don't know. There was a blankness. I don't know if Jonathan Majors is a good or bad actor, but there's a blankness to his performance that I guess that's what he does, right? Like, he just is trying to figure out who is this character, because they doesn't seem to be getting any direction. I don't know, or nothing for the script. Can I say one other thing about? I mean, one thing I actually was like into at the beginning of this movie, and I thought, if they had gone in this direction, it probably would not have served the Kevin Feige MCU like purpose of this movie. But this whole idea of like discovering the quantum realm as this populated place where there's this whole like parallel civilization and all of this stuff, like
Star Wars bar.
Yeah. I mean, like I was buying it. I was picking it up. I was like, okay, I want to see more of this origin, whatever. And then it just devolves into this like, revolution of the people against the distant, out of touch rulers, and we've got to. And it's like, you know, like, I don't care about any of these people because I don't know where they are. Like, who are they? How did they get here? What's going on? Like, that just seemed, it just got so cliche so quickly. And to your point,
maybe most maybe maybe most people are happier under Kang.
Yeah, that's a good point.
We don't really see the Kang. We don't really see the rest.
Say what you will about him, but he respects intellectual property rights.
You know what Kang does? He brought order to the quantum realm. He brought law and he brought order.
I will say this, the only period in which the movie had me with it was when Scott and his jailbait daughter are originally captured and brought to whatever this outpost yes. of Star Wars bar creatures are. And we get Chidi from The Good Place as a mentat, right? And we get sort of the interesting creature with the holes and they drink
holes. Well, he doesn't have holes.
He doesn't have holes. Anyway, the point is, like, that was 4 minutes or so of the movie where I was with it there. Right. Yeah. It was that sort of felt loose. It felt like an Ant-Man movie, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was pleasingly silly.
It was pleasingly silly. And then that silliness just went away for long stretches. It became this deadly earnest, like almost like an Avatar-esque.
Yes.
You know, epic. We are making an epic about the fight for this civilization. And we are going to be Braveheart and Searing. And I.
Well, and Scott's daughter, like all of a sudden, a lot. Like, I just didn't buy it. I just didn't buy this. Like, now she is, you know, I guess she's a do-gooder up in our world. So she must be a do-gooder in the quantum realm. I just. No establishing.
I would have given this movie 2 thumbs up if it had started with her talking about how she got arrested because she turned into giant girl and cleaned out the homeless encampment.
Yes. A hero for our time.
It's not good. Mm-mm. The other thing I will say, and this is not fair, but this is the first all CGI movie I have seen since Avatar. Avatar is still in theaters.
Yeah.
The difference in visual quality between this and that, and I understand it's not maybe entirely fair to compare.
It's not
the
fair.
Two,
well, it's not fair because
they are both
James Cameron
Disney properties. And
look, James Cameron spent 5 years making that movie. Like, it isn't fair for a bunch of reasons. But it is factually correct to say that anybody who worked on Ant-Man and also Black Panther Wakanda Forever and is forced to have their movie in the theaters at the same time as Avatar The Way of Water, they should feel embarrassed because the movie, the visual quality in the movies is so disparate and the distance between them is so jarring that I'm sorry, you have Black Panther Wakanda Forever, which is set in this like underwater civilization with like blue skinned people fighting. And it looks like something that a child made on their Macintosh laptop in their garage compared to Avatar The Way of Water. And the same with this. I mean, again, there was a story, you know, somebody was complaining on background that, you know, we lost a bunch of our on Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, somebody from Quantumania was complaining, like, we lost a bunch of our FX guys who were rushed over to work on Wakanda Forever, so we didn't have the resources we need to finish. And I'm like, well, they didn't work there either. Like, both of these movies look like total fucking shit. They both look like complete garbage.
I think Ant-Man looks better than Wakanda Forever did.
It looks...
If you force me to rank them...
I don't.
I think this looks better. Yeah.
I think Wakanda Forever looked like all of the underwater scenes were basically. Again, I saw Wakanda Forever in IMAX 2D, not 3D, but IMAX. And I do wonder if seeing Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania in IMAX 3D would have been better because it at least would have been kind of brighter and sharper than, you know, I saw it at my draft house, which is fine, but like I'm sure the IMAX experience is better.
It did quite well, right?
Well, that's fine. This movie made more than the one before it and the one before that.
Cinema score was really low for it, though.
B.
Which is
Yeah, it got a B from cinema score audiences, which is the equivalent of a D. I mean, Eternals also got a B.
I wonder if any of the Marvel movies start to pay a price for the sins of their predecessors. Marvels is coming out. Who's excited for Marvels?
They also pushed that one back by 4 months.
Oh, they did?
Again, I think.
Oh, I thought that was supposed to be coming out soon. No?
Yeah, well, it was supposed to come out in July, and they pushed it back to November.
Because it's so good.
Is that the one with the...
well, I'm sure because
is that
it's
the
so
one
good.
With the vaginas on the poster? Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. That's that now. Now, now,
that's
now
not how we refer to. That's not how we refer to female superheroes on the show.
Mike, no, there's actual. Yeah. No. There's actual shapes. It looks like. Well, okay. Sorry.
I don't know what you're talking about. The poster I saw.
What is going on
you
there?
You haven't seen the poster.
Ms. Marvel and Captain Marvel and another Marvel somebody.
There's.
I don't know.
The lady from WandaVision. Another movie that you like will not understand if you haven't watched
WandaVision
and also
yeah.
Ms. Marvel.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking at the poster. Well, there's some lotus-shaped lights on it. Okay, that all right, well.
Those are the actresses.
Well, it's been nice being the co-host on this show.
It was a good run, Mike. It was a great 3 weeks.
That's good. All right. I'm sure it's fine. No, we're not going to stop. Right, we can't stop. Okay. All right. Do you guys have any other thoughts?
How bad is this? So if we're going to rank the terrible Marvel movies, I think it's not as bad as the Eternals. I think it's half a rung higher than the Eternals.
It's in the bottom tier with Eternals. It's more like
Iron Man 2.
Iron Man
yes.
2 or Thor Dark World, which were both movies, again, yeah. that tried to do too much setting up of the rest of everything that was happening in the Marvel Cinematic Universe at the time.
Yeah.
Like, those movies have the same problem that this movie has, which is that they're trying to do too much world building outside of what the confines of this specific movie call for. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well,
one more thing. MODOK, my issue with MODOK is that it looks like they photoshopped a face onto in a lower resolution onto like a full resolution image of his like, you know, chassis or whatever. That's what it looked like. I mean, it just looks so bad and stretched out and terrible. I hated it so much. I was angry. I
didn't even realize it was
angry.
Supposed to be Corey's. Like, it doesn't look like Corey Stahl, right? The actor who played. I thought it was somebody else. I thought they had, like, you know, they couldn't get it, like, sort of, didn't the Red Skull, they couldn't get Hugo Weaving.
Corey Stahl was too busy.
Yeah, exactly, right. No, I was just like, what is this? What am I looking at? Anyway.
Well, all right.
That's all the time we're giving the show today.
Yeah, take us home, JBL.
That's all the time we're giving to this show today. Be sure to like us on the Patreon, and we're going to start putting this stuff back on iTunes and all of the things.
We're going to have a bonus episode. Ooh. We'll talk about that in the outtakes. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba. Bonus episode. We're going to do a bonus episode.
Super excited for the bonus show.
Should we give people a hint? What it's going to be about?
I don't remember. What is it going to be about?
It's going to be about this dirt on our faces.
Oh, Lenten sacrifices. This is going to be hot content for Father Anthony and Father Harrison.
If they subscribe. Yeah,
we got a couple priests. We're going to be really excited for this bonus show.
All right. I'm sure it's fine.